from the entertainment capital of the world, fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, it's Jerry Pippin with entertainment news, views, and interviews.
Go away, winter, spring, summer, or fall, Las Vegas has given it all.
In March of this year, the Street of Dreams will become longer. Stretching 8.5 miles from the Mandalay Bay to the new resort called the Elm Resort. It has a $1 billion price tag and is located way south of Las Vegas at Rose Parkway and Las Vegas Boulevard. In fact, technically, it's in Henderson, Nevada. But it does touch Las Vegas at the very edge. The M stands for Mamel Correal Associates. They have been responsible for some of the most outstanding designs and architecture in Las Vegas in history. Included in their roster, Wynn Las Vegas, Bellagio, Mirage, Rio Palazzo Suites, New York, New York, Caesar's Palace, Treasure Island, and the list goes on and on and on. The Elm Resort will be a classy place indeed. 390-room tower, 92,000 square feet of casino area, a 60,000 square foot conference room, a 20,000 square foot, 8 restaurants, 4 bars, 1 entertainment venue, and retail outlets. Oh, yes, I forgot the pool area. That's a mere 100,000 square feet itself. Then there's the 63,000 square foot movie entertainment theater complex with 14 screens. And there are other things I don't have time to go into. We'll be talking more about the Elm Resort as we get closer to the opening. That'll be in March, as I say. Let's go back that 8.5 miles that I mentioned at Mandalay Bay, and on down the street, of course, is the Tropicana. At the Tropicana, an end of an era is about to happen. On March 28th, the historic Folies Bergère closes, less than a year shy of its 50th anniversary. 2 days later, down the street still, a brand new peep show opens at the Planet Hollywood. Could this be the new type of reviews for Las Vegas? Peep Show is being done by Broadway director Jerry Mitchell, who has made no secret of the dream that he wanted to restage for Las Vegas his own version of 21st century productions of things like The Follies and Jubilee. He's best known for his restaged Hairspray version in Las Vegas some years back. So I guess the end of March, and then in April, the torch will be passed from the old way of doing those production shows to something new. Personally, I'm going to miss the old production shows. It was indeed Las Vegas, don't you think? Let's get to the entertainment. On January 30th, at the Orleans Hotel, which is actually not on the Strip, but on West Tropicana, the Smothers Brothers will open. They're still funny after all these years. Here they are on stage, still doing the brother act. And I guess that's because they're brothers.
We like to do at this time the song that my brother wrote. This is original song my brother wrote 5 years ago. My brother wrote this song in a fit of creative passion and genius. My brother wrote this song. And we only performed it, my brother and myself, only 3 times. We performed this song 3 times, and it was immediately stolen from us by this other commercial crass. Was stolen from us by this other commercial crass group that stole the song. They never acknowledged.
Tommy, they just stole the song from my younger brother. Don't go into that. It's just embarrassing to say.
They're adults. They're entitled now. They stole the song from
along
my brother,
with my luggage.
Along with his luggage. And they put it on one of the major record companies. They never once. And it sold over 3 million records, my brother's song that he wrote, and they never acknowledged it. As a result, it sold over 3 million records, and as a result, pay attention. As a result, every time we perform my own brother's song that he wrote and his creative effort and genius responsible, every time we perform this his own song, we've been ridiculed.
And persecuted.
And persecuted. We've been ridiculed and persecuted every time we perform this song. That people will come up and say, I heard your show and you stole that song from that other commercial crass group. You just stole that song. So we're going to ridicule you and prosecute you. Persecute you. So I'd like to take this time to set the record straight. As my brother's depraved of the one...
You were right the first time.
He was depraved of this opportunity of having for posterity to understand and enjoy. I'd like to publicly dedicate the performance of the song to my younger brother for his creative effort and genius in writing the song.
You don't have to do that.
I'm going to, Dickie. Oh. I'd like to publicly dedicate to you, Dickie Smothers, the creative effort and genius responsible for this song. I'd like to publicly dedicate to you at this time.
Thanks.
Swell.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. We'd like to perform it for you now, and I'm sure you've all heard the song many times before, but we'd like to do it for you in the original first time, the first time way in the original.
You mean the virgin time. Edition.
The what?
I said, you mean the Virgin Edition. We'll sing it in the Virgin Edition.
I don't know what that means.
Come on.
Edition, I don't know what it means.
Edition?
We like to do it's original virgin.
No, sing it. Sing it.
Ready?
I'm ready.
I knew it'd be ridiculed.
Throughout history, there's been the story of the internal triangle. This particular eternal triangle. This particular internal triangle concerned a condemned man named Tom Crudely, a man named Jason, and another man named Sally Jean Johnson.
Hey, now cut that out.
Oh, hang down your head, Tom Crudely.
Poor boy.
Hang down your head and fly. Ha ha ha. Hang down your head, Tom Crudely. I met her on a mountain.
Poor boy.
Oh, there I took her several times. I met her on a mountain. Stabbed her with my knife. Hang your head down. Hang your head down. Hang down your head, Tom Crudely.
Poor boy.
Hang down your head and fly. Hang down your head, Tom Crudely. Poor boy, you're hung.
That's the Smothers Brothers. Still working. They'll be at the Orleans in Las Vegas this weekend, Friday, January 30th through Sunday, February 1st. Motion picture producer Paul Davids, who's also quite a director and a writer in his own right, has been out making the rounds, pushing his new documentary. It's a film you must see. I expect it to win a lot of awards. It's called Jesus in India. We're going to talk to Paul when we come back about his career. And I imagine we'll plug Jesus in India. I think you'll find him a colorful, creative man. I'm Jerry Pippin. This is the Las Vegas Radio Show.
Why visit the Grand Canyon in Arizona? Marv Mason knows why.
Mainly because the Grand Canyon is known as one of the seven natural wonders of the world.
No one gives a more personalized tour or knows more about the Grand Canyon than Marvelous Marv.
My main thing is education on the geology, because the Grand Canyon is a life record. It shows us where we were at one time on the planet with the continental drift and all the layers that, were laid down by sediments, and then how the canyon was carved. And, of course, the views, you know, a picture doesn't do it justice. But it's nice to have somebody there tell you about it that's lived there.
It's the best way to tour the Grand Canyon. Mar picks you up in a modern van at your hotel in the Grand Canyon area and takes you on a day-long tour. Contact Marvelous Mar Vacation Tours. Call and talk to him personally, 928-707-0291. Or visit his website,
MarvelousMarv.com. Real easy, real easy.
Hello, everyone around the world. Welcome to Las Vegas. And we're broadcasting from the Casbar Lounge, world famous at the Sahara Hotel and Casino. Las Vegas history goes all the way back in the late 50s, when this was the place where all the major entertainers played. We're broadcasting in the same lounge that Don Rickles made a name for himself, appearing nightly. First act I saw at the Casbar was Pete Barbeauty, who did five shows a night, believe it or not, with his piano and all the other instruments and working the crowd. And, oh, yes, he even had the toilet plunger that he played. Anyway, this place is full of history from Las Vegas on the Las Vegas Radio Show. This is a little bit of the soundtrack music from an unbelievably classic film. And I say that with all my heart. It's called Jesus in India. And it's available on the DVD. You can pick it up by going to JesusInIndiaTheMovie.com. And we have a link to it on the website, by the way, at JerryPippin.com. And also an interview with Paul Davids about the movie. But since we're doing the Las Vegas show, I thought we'd talk to Paul about some general things, mainly showbiz.
Paul. Always great to see you again, Paul. I know we've talked before. One time we did a broadcast from Roswell, and you made a movie about Roswell. In fact, recently, I guess that's the reason you're here in Las Vegas, you made a speech to a group of people about all of the victims of Roswell and what they had to say, the second or third tier witnesses. Did you find out anything new? Can you tell us anything here?
Well, I talked a lot about what we've learned in the last decade since the movie Roswell came out from Showtime.
And that is available on a DVD now.
Artisan came out with the DVD, and people who'd like to get it can find it at Amazon.com very easily. There's a number of shows that have the title Roswell in it, so they have to look for the one that's the movie that stars Kyle MacLachlan and Martin Sheen and Dwight Yoakam.
May I want to get into something else with you, the far afield from Roswell, in a moment, but maybe you could give a thumbnail about something interesting about Roswell and not everybody knows. I mean, you know everything there is to know about these people.
Oh, I doubt it.
Yeah, well, you seem to. You've done lots of research. We talked originally how you...
Let's put it this way. I know what they tell me.
Okay.
Only they know what's true. One of the most interesting things I've seen in the last... decade, or some of the people who've come forward, people with a reputation, part of the establishment, part of the military or NASA, who've made confirming statements about the extraterrestrial nature of the Roswell crash. And, that would include two astronauts, the late Gordon Cooper, who we sadly lost recently, wrote a book, a biographical book called Leap of Faith. And in the book, he confirmed what he had told me previously privately and what he said in several video interviews. And he's quite insistent and unequivocal that there has been alien contact and that the information has been withheld from the public.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the movie business, since we teased our audience about the UFO thing.
Sure.
some interesting things happening with the movies these days. I think you have a new project yourself, don't you? You've been involved in a few things. You're working on something. You guys, Hollywood guys, always are.
Well, there's you always have 10 irons in the fire, and you see which stake falls into the fire and burns, and and which one come out medium well or very well. No, I think there's a few things I'm, you know, not prepared to announce yet on the radio, but Richard Hoagland and I have had a project in the works for a long time, and we thought we were going to have a green light from the studio we were working with, RKO Pictures, one of the oldest studios in Hollywood. In fact, they made King Kong back in the 30s, and after a lot of development with RKO, their production plans fell out for all of the pictures that they were working on and developing, and it left us in limbo for a while, but I can see the daylight now because there's been some renewed and very, very strong interest in what I think is an absolutely excellent, excellent project, a tense political thriller that has so much to say about what's been happening right here on Earth while we've been trying to make those discoveries on Mars, the political battles.
Sorry. As I guess they say, pre-development instead of post-development or whatever.
Well, you know, development is the phase of a project when you're putting the screenplay together and getting it to a point where everybody can say, that's it, that's what we're going to shoot. We've been in development with the project for several years.
It's further along than that.
Yeah, we have a screenplay ready to shoot that's generating a lot of excitement.
Seems Hollywood likes sequels all of a sudden. Have you noticed that?
Well, it's not been all of a sudden. It's been for a couple of decades now.
Yeah, I guess it's a business reason.
Well, Jerry, it is because the studios want franchises. You want to reduce your risk. And if you have a project that's been a success, Jaws 1 generates Jaws 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and a half.
Easy to get money for those projects.
Well, particularly the most successful ones, the studios are eager to follow up a successful act. Occasionally, the filmmaker puts the brakes on. You haven't seen a sequel to E.T. You haven't seen one to Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Bring people out.
Well, you're a scriptwriter as well.
Yes.
Which helps, I imagine. When we talk about Hollywood, you've had TV projects, lots of TV projects, too. At least you've talked to... one of the things you're involved in, see, I got to find out what Paul David's up to.
Well, you know, I wanted to talk about something from the past, and the Transformers show was probably the most popular cartoon show in the United States. In the late 1980s, it was based on the Hasbro Bradley toys, the Transformer toys, the robots.
Yeah, I remember
they
that.
Changed shapes into everything. And we had 150 toy characters that we based that show on, with the stars, of course, being Megatron and Optimus Prime. There was one film made. I hear now they're going to make a major feature film of the Transformers using state-of-the-art CGI effects. I'm really looking forward to it. We have a Transformers convention, at least one every year in a different part of the country. There's one that's called BotCon, Robot Convention, BotCon. Mm-hmm. But the characters of the Transformers are the Autobots and the Decepticons, so that's how you get BotCon there also. And thousands of fans show up every year. We have all the Transformer toys there, and we had some wonderful stories. I was aboard as production coordinator for over 80 half hours of that show. I was there for, you know, 90-95% of the life of the show. It was really fabulous science fiction, tremendous imagination, and these stories are now all available from Rhino Entertainment on DVD. There are these beautiful box sets that have come out, where you can get all of the Transformer half hours that were ever produced. So I was in production on just about all of them, and then I wrote four episodes that are really remembered by these fans. It's amazing.
I bet that's a real kick. Have you been to some of those conventions?
I do go to the conventions. We had one in Pasadena this year. I was one back east in North Carolina a couple of years ago. And we get our original voice actors to come to these. Peter Cullen was the voice of our star, Optimus Prime. and the lineup of people to get Peter Cullen's autograph this year. I still call them kids. It's the adults in their 20s who grew up on these shows when they were 10. They stand in line 3 hours to get his autograph. Their patience to get my autograph is maybe 20 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's 19 longer than mine.
So that was a great part of my past. And the other thing I look back on so fondly was my involvement with Star Wars. Not the movies, but sequel books. And in the early 1990s, before we saw Star Wars number one, the one with the very young Anakin Skywalker, there was quite a number of years that went between, I believe it was 1983 was Return of the Jedi, as I recall, and into the 1990s we got the next Star Wars. So the folks at Lucasfilm were looking for a way to keep Star Wars in the mind of their fans during those many years. And my wife and I had come up with an idea for a series of books that eventually they found a publisher for them, Bantam Books. And we wrote books such as The Glove of Darth Vader and The Lost City of the Jedi. Then there was Zorba the Hutt's Revenge. Now, Zorba is Jabba the Hutt's father. We invented Zorba. Not to be confused with Zorba the Greek.
I guess he wouldn't have to have a father. You just can't really conceive that.
We did Mission from Mount Yoda and Queen of the Empire, in which Princess Leia almost marries the head of the Empire. And then there was Prophets of the Dark Side. Unfortunately, after about a decade, the books they went out of print, so you have to get them as used books now. But they sold millions of copies before they retired them after a decade, and it was quite a ride. They're all illustrated, and they're new stories. It's not the stories of the movies, but they follow Return of the Jedi. They take a 5-year period of time in the history of the Empire and the Rebel Alliance after the Return of the Jedi, and they sort of fill in the blanks there.
You know, the movie business, for instance, they spent $125 million promoting a recent film, which is just amazing to me, the money they spend on promotion alone. We're not talking about the production values, and the major studio ends up spending ungodly amounts of money. How come it costs so much for a major against an independent to put a motion picture out?
Well, you know, all the rules have changed, and the budgets have changed. I mean, today you can have an independent movie that costs more than $50 million and has major stars. Traffic with Michael Douglas was considered an independent picture. I think it was, you know, an $80 million budget? I mean, how is this an independent? The meaning of it all has changed, and the budgets are so large. The sophistication of special effects, the visuals, requires so much. It costs a lot to make them, and then you've got to make them a household word. And to do that, you know, you've got to have your posters on buses, on billboards across the country. You've got to be in primetime television. It's absolutely immense, and many of them fall by the wayside.
It's kind of event marketing for everything, then.
It is. Now, and I... You know, it's a trend I don't welcome necessarily. I mean, I think that it's a great place for the big pictures, but we need the small pictures. We need the intimate pictures. In the old days, well, when I was growing up, we always had the B picture. We had the double feature. You know, an expensive picture where on budgets of, you know, $1 to $8 million, and there was a place for the $200,000 or $300,000 movie. And Roger Corman was a low-budget producer who produced hundreds of them. And you see, he was able to give so much young talent a break because the movies didn't cost that much. And that's what we've lost, what we don't have anymore. What happens to the...
Cannot even do that for television now.
No, the TV movies have such an expense. I mean, look at Steven Spielberg's Taken for the Sci-Fi Channel. 10-part miniseries. Yes. Immensely expensive. Look at Children of Doom. Well,
We were just talking about Adonis earlier.
The budgets are up and up and up and up. Now, you do have the film festivals around the country that show the small films. Once in a while, one of them will get picked up and it'll get distribution. It happened to me. Your viewers might not know some of my non-UFO films, but I'm an artist. I'm very interested in the arts. I invite your viewers to go to my website, pauldavids.com, and I spell my last name, David with an S, Paul Davids, one word. I've got an art gallery there with over 100 of my paintings, and I made a film about Vincent van Gogh called Starry Night, and it was made on a low budget. And it went to the film festival circuit, and finally Universal Pictures picked it up. Mm-hmm. And they put it out on video and DVD throughout the country. Then they started selling it to television around the world, and it's really gotten out there. But that was a stroke of luck. You see, it doesn't happen very often.
Starry Night.
Starry Night. Like the words of the song by Don McLean,
yes,
Starry, Starry Night. It's the name of a Van Gogh painting.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a fantasy in which the artist Vincent van Gogh, who only sold one painting in his lifetime, whose paintings are worth hundreds of millions of dollars, I mean, the aggregate of his lifetime's work today would probably value $2 billion. And he saw nothing. He saw $100 in his lifetime for the sale of one painting, 400 francs, approximately. So I have a fantasy story in which Vincent shows up today and finds out he ought to be a wealthy man. It's tough to collect the money.
Right,
he needs an attorney.
Right, I should say, do we know an attorney for him? There's got to be one out there.
Well, he gets an attorney, but maybe he gets the wrong one.
You got to get. Now we know why Paul Davids is successful. He's getting these little twists in there. We have a link to your website as well on our website at jerrypippin.com by this interview. But if you're listening on the radio, it's pauldavids.com. It's an S, right?
Yes.
And speaking of websites, Paul, we don't want to forget about your latest movie, a great film, Jesus in India, themovie.com. Paul, you'll be back in Nevada at the end of February. We need to sit down and do a show on Jesus of India. This is the Las Vegas Radio Show. I'm Jerry Pippin. Don't go away. Marvelous Marv Grand Canyon Tours offers you a unique look at one of the great wonders of the world, the Grand Canyon.
Been at the Grand Canyon area most of my life, so pretty much grew up in the area and know quite a few things that the common tourist doesn't know. And I need to avoid all the people and stuff and try to take them to secluded areas.
A day excursion, personally, conducted by Marvelous Marv.
Yeah, we started about 8 o'clock in the morning. We're done about 4:30. Absolutely. And I have a little photo CD disc for him with 1,000 of my favorite pictures and some video. And
no other tour offers so much, and no other personalized tour offers a better price.
No, I'm still the same, and I'm the most reasonable price tour of the Grand Canyon now. $85 a person. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Call 928-707-0291 or check him out at Marvelous Marv. Dot com.